Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3.
Hello and welcome to Wireless, a series all about radio broadcast on Flirt FM 101.3 in Galway and on flirtfm.ie. And as ever, a very warm welcome to all listeners on other community stations across Ireland. I'm John Walsh and I'll be with you for the next hour. Wireless covers all aspects of radio, analogue and digital broadcasting, community, regional and national broadcasters, niche broadcasting, pirate radio, podcasting, radio ownership and radio's history and future prospects. Coming up on the May edition of Wireless, we meet the people behind some of the growing number of online radio stations in Ireland and find out why they're doing radio in this way. And we look ahead to the Hearsay International Audio Festival taking place online later this month.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
But first this month, I'd like to reflect on what's a big change in the Irish radio landscape for those of us who care about the history of the medium and indeed possibilities for future experimentation with radio. In just a few days' time, on May the 6th, the last high-powered AM radio transmitter in Ireland will fall silent, the massive BBC Radio Ulster rig at Lisnagarvie in County Antrim. In operation for almost a century, this AM beast on 1341 kHz is the highest profile casualty yet in the BBC's ongoing dismantling of its AM network. It's used a lot for sports opt-outs and has even covered local GAA games not featured on RTE. With 100 kilowatts in power, it spills well over the border and is audible throughout the east of Ireland and further afield at night. In fact, I've even picked it up myself after dark in Germany and Italy because of the clear channel. Other than the DXers, those of us who like to pick up distant radio signals, most people may not miss it, but it does mark the end of an era in broadcasting in Ireland. As I've said before in this programme, AM is a robust technology that offers solid coverage over large areas without any concerns about geo-blocking, data limits or bad broadband. Now that commercial operators are abandoning the senior radio band in droves, there's still a chance for regulators to hand it over to experimental low-powered services. The best example is the Netherlands, which has over 90 LP AM radio stations, as well as many pirates on that band. So that's my personal ode to BBC Radio Ulster on 1341 kHz. And yes, they'll need a new hourly ident from May the 6th.
It's time for the BBC Radio Ulster news.
On 92 to 95 FM
and 1341 medium wave.
This is BBC Radio Ulster.
It's 2 o'clock with the BBC News. I'm Tina.
Now we turn to another type of radio altogether, one that avoids analogue spectrum and broadcasts online only. The fascinating phenomenon of online radio is really taking off in Ireland. A longtime friend of this programme, radio activist Brian Green, has compiled a list of 226 active radio streams based in Ireland, and this is available at radio.ie/tune. Taking away the legal and pirate stations on AM or FM, this leaves approximately 150 online-only stations, a huge number by comparison with the UK, which has about 900 such stations with a far bigger population, of course. So why is this trend so popular in Ireland? And what motivates people to avoid the legal or pirate routes to broadcasting on analogue platforms? Today we bring you three interviews with radio stations opting for the online route only, based in Tipperary, Dublin and Westmeath. We start with Pure Radio from County Tipperary and its director, Paul Byrne.
I spent 40 years working in the broadcast industry. Started off back in the pirate days in the early 1980s, progressed into the, I suppose, license stations from 1989 onwards. Started off as a broadcaster, presenter, moved out of that, moved more into the management end of it, particularly on the programming side, moved out of that, moved into the business side of it, became chief executive of Tip FM back in the year 2000, and in 2004 became chief executive of Radio Kerry. And in my time in Radio Kerry in 2005, we purchased Shannonside Northern Sound. And then after a lifetime of working in radio, in December 2019, I decided to draw kind of a line under it and say it was time to step back from the brink and have a bit of time to myself. And our plan was in 2020 to travel, see the world, go to South Africa on safari and so forth and so on. And then along came COVID-19 and I haven't got outside the front garden since.
And along came Pure Radio at the same time as part of that?
Pure Radio came along a little bit after that. Pure Radio wasn't top of mind, I'd say, at the outset when I retired. As a couple of friends of mine here, I live just outside Clonmel, and a couple of friends of mine and I were talking during last summer, in the early part of the summer in May, and at that stage we'd been 2 or 3 months into our first lockdown because of COVID, and we were talking about maybe creating an online radio station which would provide information in relation to COVID. And would I get involved? And I said I would get involved. I had no problem getting involved because obviously with what was going on, I was at home anyway and doing nothing, to be quite honest, except cutting the grass. So I said, yeah, I'll get involved, but I'll only get involved if we do it right and if we do everything above board and all the rest of it. So we started the work on Pure Radio probably around June or July in terms of putting it together, getting all the various licenses that we needed for royalties and registered the company and all of that kind of stuff and sourcing, you know, servers and the technology and the software we were going to use and what's the best software, getting the imaging made. And by the time we had all of that kind of sorted and ready to roll, we were suddenly in November. So Pure Radio pretty much came on air at the end of November with three offerings. You have Pure Radio, Pure Gold, and at Christmas time, we had Pure Christmas. And Pure Christmas then was replaced in January by Pure Country. So we have three services.
And why did you decide to go down the online route? Because you have a lifetime of experience in radio. You know how robust FM is in Ireland. You know also there are options there for part-time community licenses and so on. Why did you opt for online instead?
I suppose it's a little bit like going back to where I started. The online side of it is not regulated. It doesn't have the bureaucracy attached to it either that you'd have in a commercial sense or community radio license either. With online, you can pretty much decide what you want to do and just do it. I've always felt that the creativity in radio, the most creative time when I was working in radio wasn't towards the end. It was at the beginning during the pirate radio days, which again was unregulated. And it was competitive, and you could have a small town where you might have 2 or 3 radio stations, and you had to be different. So people were very creative in the community. They had ideas, and they tried things, and they were able to try them, and they were allowed to try them as well. So in that regard, it was easier to do. It allowed much more freedom as well in terms of what we wanted to do. And I think that it also gives an opportunity for people who probably haven't worked on radio before to come on board and try things, and just try different things out as well. So I suppose the fact that it wasn't regulated was probably the biggest draw to the internet radio side of it. Plus, of course, from my time working with Radio Kerry and Tip and all the rest of it, and seeing the way the technology has changed, I firmly believe that coming down the tracks in the not too distant future, pretty much all radio stations, their main means of getting their product out will be either through the internet or some sort of smart technology. That's not too far away.
And obviously that has big implications then for the whole regulatory framework, which is based on restrictions because of people broadcasting on FM. But if FM goes, and if everybody's going to be online, surely then the whole question of regulation needs to be looked at again.
Absolutely. And I think that's something that will have to happen anyway. And I think it's an ongoing process at the moment where they are looking at the whole media structure and the whole media plan. But it's things move very slowly in this country. Maybe it's to do with the fact that we're an island. If we were on the continent in Europe, and surrounded by other countries, we would have to conform and move and change with those countries as well, so as that you'd have kind of one rule applies to all, if you like. Because we're an island and we're detached from it, we're not necessarily, we can do things differently here in Ireland. So I don't see FM being turned off anytime soon in Ireland. I think the change is going to come from the consumers. I think that the way people consume audio, radio, speech, I think that's changing. I don't think FM is going to change. I think FM is going to be there for a long, long time yet in this country. But I do think that consumers are changing. And the smart technology is interesting in terms of, you know, the Amazon Alexas and all the rest of it. Those are now becoming far more prominent in homes. I know in our home here, we have a radio, but we never use it. We use Alexa the whole time to listen to whatever we want to listen to, whether it's a podcast or whether it's a radio or whether it's an FM licensed radio station, of which there are many good ones out there, or whether it is our own online radio stations. We use smart technology. I think more and more homes are going to become smart. And I think that will change the way that people consume speech content.
And obviously, bringing that into cars as well, obviously, will be absolutely crucial. When we spoke before coming on air, you mentioned what you had seen in Germany in that regard.
Yeah, I spent a bit of time in Germany a couple of years back. And while I was in Germany, visited a number of the major players. You must remember that a small radio station in Germany is probably broadcasting to 10 million people. But and in Vienna as well, we've also visited Vienna at the time. DAB is the big thing on the continent, right? So they moved, everything is focused on DAB in the continent, DAB Plus. But they're also preparing for all the smart technology. The regulations on the continent will mean that all cars that are manufactured for continental Europe in a few years' time will all have to have an IP address. So they will all have smart technology built into them. So when you get into your car, you'll simply tell your car, whatever you call it, what it is that you want to listen to. So the days of having a dial or a button or preset radio stations would be gone, because you could be driving through downtown Munich and listening to Kiss FM in Los Angeles by simply telling the car, play Kiss FM Los Angeles. So on the continent in Europe, they're preparing for that and getting their technology and ready for that as well, and looking at different ways to maximize that, so it's not just audio, it's kind of visual stuff that they can do as well, and how all that is going to be measured and how it's going to be monetized. That's what they're working on the continent at the moment.
And do you think, have we missed the boat in terms of DAB now, or does it still have a place in the future Irish radio landscape?
No, DAB is gone. DAB has had its run. We missed the boat on that one, to be fair, simply because the technology has moved on. When DAB first came about 10, 15 years ago, whatever it was, this was new technology. But you now have, as I said, smart technology taking over from that. No one is going to go to the trouble of investing money in DAB, or no consumer is going to buy a DAB radio, because you don't need it. You just don't need it. Like with smart technology, phones, tablets, whatever, you can listen to whatever station you want. You don't need it on DAB. So DAB is, as far as I'm concerned anyway, it's only my own view, is that I think DAB will never happen in Ireland. We're just going to skip that chapter and move on to the next one.
So coming back to pure radio then, you have three streams, but is one of them the mainstream, and does that have more live programming, for instance? How does the service or the services work?
Okay, well, the logic behind pure radio is quite simple, really. We've kind of three services, but each of them are aimed at a different demographic. So the idea was to create an online service, smart service, which would have something for everybody. Our three stations, Pure Radio would be the primary station, and Pure Radio would have the speech content elements of it, would be all locally based. We geared it and aimed it specifically at Tipperary. We haven't taken it outside the county. We've aimed it specifically at Tipperary, and the speech content that's on that radio station is all locally relevant. It also has a music policy which is aimed at under 50-year-olds. So it's a speech radio station, speech elements in a music station which is aimed at under 50-year-olds. We also have a station called Pure Gold, which plays 70s and 80s music. That is aimed at the over 50s. And then we also have a radio station called pure country, which is quite broad in its appeal, I'd have to say, because it plays American and Irish country. And as you know, American country at the moment is it's made that crossover into contemporary as well with the likes of Taylor Swift and Keith Urban and other artists like that as well. They dominate the charts, both country charts and contemporary charts in the States. So the country stations have a broad appeal pretty much to everybody and anybody, because you've got Irish country artists that are being played on it, American country artists as well, 70s and 80s on Pure Gold. And then Pure Radio is today's music or current music aimed at people really who are under 50, along with speech content as well that's relevant to people who are of or from Tipperary.
And how is the service going? How are you going down with the listeners? What kind of feedback, or have you any numbers about listenership, for instance?
Well, so far, so good, I'd have to say. The number of listeners that we had in March was over 10,000, you know. So it's significant enough, but still in its infancy, considering that we've only been on air since November. So it's proving to be quite popular. We would have probably about 6,000 unique users, which is a lot for an internet radio station that has been on air for 4 months. So far, so good. There seems to be a demand for it. We understand our role, insofar as our radio stations are largely music driven, with speech content on Pure Radio as well, but they're largely music driven. So we see ourselves as kind of providing background music to a large extent, which you can put on, but also has speech content and information which will be locally relevant as well, but in small doses, very small doses. But largely they're music radio stations. So there seems to have been an appetite for what we're doing so far, with over 10,000 listeners in a month and over 6,000 unique users. So quite happy so far with the way that it's going.
Paul Byrne of Pure Radio in Tipperary, and you can listen in to the various streams at pureradio.ie.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
Dublin Digital Radio is one of the longer-standing online stations, set up in 2016 on an independent, not-for-profit basis. Its eclectic mix of programming spans music, art, politics and culture, and is created by about 175 volunteers. Cathy Flynn of DDR fills us in on the background to the station.
Well, I'm not a founding member, so I wasn't in at those like early discussions. I joined the team later, but I guess it's an easy and cheap way to set up a radio station apart from there not needing to be a license. It's actually quite, you know, cheap to do, and it's not terribly technical difficult to do. Not having not broadcasting on the regular FM airwaves means that we don't have the BAI license, or we don't need to have the BAI license. What that does do is cut you off from funding from the BAI, but it also means that we aren't beholden to all of their rules. Some of their rules are good, like you have to play Irish music, a certain amount of Irish music per hour or whatever, and some of your broadcasting needs to be in Irish, I believe, is another one of the rules. We certainly, without guidance from the BAI ourselves, I say way surpass the requirement to play music by Irish artists. So people do these things on their own if they're let. Not everyone needs guidance in that regard.
But has this got to do maybe with the philosophy of DDR and what kind of values the station is based on? And can you tell us about those?
So the philosophy behind DDR was really to be a space for alternative music in a really broad sense. People think alternative is just guitarist music normally, but any kind of music that doesn't really get a look in on the more commercial stations. DDR is not commercial, so like we're not playlisted. The presenters and the DJs on our radio station can play whatever they like, which is part of the philosophy. We're also strive to be like a progressive and left-leaning organization, and having a degree of freedom around our content is obviously important when you're trying to be progressive. So I guess being an online station, especially in the Irish media landscape, does mean that we have more freedom than other stations and FM stations. Many FM stations, I can think of like Near FM and stuff off the top of my head, do have progressive values and stuff, but we've gone down the online route. It's also in many ways, I guess, technology-wise, it's the future of where things are going to end up, I guess.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, I mean, does FM still matter? And have you any idea about what your listenership is like with the online-only product?
I actually don't have listenership figures because we don't really check that too much, to be honest. It has grown significantly. We can tell that much. It has grown significantly over the pandemic, and as well as people like passively listening, the actual engagement in our chat box and that, and even the amount of new residents, new presenters we've gotten. The station has continued to grow significantly. What was the other part of the question? Sorry.
The other part of the question was, does FM still matter?
Does FM still matter? I think it does. Technology-wise, people still have the FM receivers in their cars and in their homes. Not everyone has a Wi-Fi radio just yet. I guess people use Bluetooth, so they can use Bluetooth to listen from their device to an online station onto their speaker in their home or in their car. I mean, like RTE have recently just switched off all the DAB channels, so they obviously still value FM. I mean, it's still a technology that's there. Everything will eventually end up in the internet, I think. Like, everything will be an online station eventually, online only, I guess. But it's interesting to see that RTE just switched off DAB totally. I knew they were going to do it for a while, but the fact that they actually went ahead and did it, I was surprised by. And now they're a FM station, is their, and online is their only output. So, yeah.
Yeah, certainly it looks like the end of DAB in Ireland, and it's hard to see things going anywhere else other than online now in the future. But to come back to DDR, Cathy, yeah. What kind of people are involved, and what kind of output do you have? What's the average day like on the station?
It's extremely varied. In terms of genre and content, it could be anywhere from people chatting about their lives to, you know, there's a heavy metal show, there's plenty of dance music. It's hard to describe a typical day because each one is different. Presenter wise, we're striving for obviously a gender balance, and we want to be representative of the communities all around Ireland, so we don't want it to be, you know, just the kind of same people over and over again. We are striving to be more representative. I think that's a goal that we haven't hit yet, but we could be better on that. But that's what we want to be. We want the output to be reflective of the community.
And do you have a long-term plan or kind of a roadmap for the future?
Yeah, so we're totally volunteer-based. So these kind of plans and discussions about future and future-proofing kind of the structures of the station, they take a while to do because everyone's kind of, you know, most people are working full-time as well as doing or organising DDR stuff. But yeah, we have been currently, for the last year or so, working on like kind of, I would describe it as almost future-proofing the structures and like the manifesto, I get, for want of a better word, that for the future, when the current kind of people organising it might move on or whatever, that it's sustainable and it can continue and it can hopefully grow as well.
And you do have an interesting funding base, don't you, that there's a subscription system for both for listeners and presenters. Can you tell us about how that works?
Yeah, so it's basically, it's all subs-based. So all of our income, we don't have any commercial, we don't take ad money or anything like that. So our funding streams are basically through Patreon at the moment is what we use. It's a way for creative like organizations or creative makers to basically get money from their fans. It's a website application. That's what we use at the moment. So we're funded by our listeners who can contribute anything from a couple of euro up to like 20 euros a month towards the station. Also the presenters pay, most of the presenters would pay like a fiver a month as well for their slot on the show via the Patreon. In previous times, we would also have funded ourselves. We would have monthly parties, which are important. Were an important part of the community aspect of the station, because they were like the station coming together in a physical sense, and our listeners, like people would come up to Dublin for them as well, as like who weren't based in Dublin and stuff. We would do that once a month, and that raised us some money as well. Sadly, we haven't been able to do that, but again, we will get back to that soon.
And you do have a physical space to go back to after COVID as well, don't you?
Well, we still have our studio. With regards where we're going to gather to have parties and that kind of thing, as is the situation all over Ireland and in Dublin, where we are, there's just an absolute lack of venues for any kind of music or arts stuff. Nightclubs and creative spaces are closing at an alarming rate, as you might have heard of the Give Us the Night campaign. So that's an issue that will affect us when we are trying to have parties again to bring our listeners and our friends and our community together. But we'll make it work.
Cathy Flynn of DDR, Dublin Digital Radio, and you can listen in on dublindigitalradio.com. Unfortunately, since we did that interview, it's been reported that the Jigsaw space is to close down, more evidence of the demise of alternative cultural spaces in Dublin in the name of development.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
Another online station is Clonmellon Community Radio, based in the tiny village of Clonmellon on the West Meath border. Broadcasting several live shows during the day and in the evening, this online station focuses strongly on people in and around Clonmellon itself. Stephen McKenna takes up the story.
Clonmellon is pretty much a one-horse town. That's how it was described to me when I moved down here almost 20 years ago. I was told it's a one-horse town. If you see two horses, one of them is a tourist or he's lost. It's a very small village. I think the last census, there was probably somewhere in about maybe 1,200 people total in the village. And, you know, it's kind of its surroundings. And basically what brought us down here was we used to live in Dublin, and we just wanted a change of pace, basically. So we started looking around, and we just kind of, I was going to say like we found Clonmellon, but I don't believe that's the case. I believe Clonmellon found us, because when we came here, like a lot of people said, especially my family said, if you move to a country village, you know, they generally keep themselves to themselves. You'll always be an outsider. You won't be welcomed in, and nothing could be further from the truth. As soon as we moved into the village, we met some fantastic people. Who are still friends of ours to this day. Now, if they think we're blow-ins, they don't say it to our face. You know, they're absolutely lovely, genuine people. So as soon as we got in here, we got settled, and you know, we just start living life, and that's, you know, that's kind of how we ended up here. And the school, like everything is so close, and there's no fear of letting your children out to play. You know, it's a lovely community, real community feeling.
And you're in County Westmeath, so obviously the licensed local station is Midlands 103, but obviously you felt that Midlands 103 wasn't perhaps serving Clonmellon very well, or do you think it does a fine job and you just wanted to do something different?
Well, John, I'll be totally honest with you. I used to listen, back in the day, I used to listen to a lot of radio. From the time I was a young lad, I used to be under the covers with a little small transistor radio, listening to Radio Luxembourg and also to Caroline, Radio Caroline. Then it progressed on to Radio Dublin, and then back in the early 80s, all the kind of, as they were known, or as they're known now, the Super Pirates came into effect with the likes of Nova, Sunshine, And I know there were a few more, but I think the Nova and Sunshine were kind of the big players in the game, and they kind of made a big change. And I used to listen to Nova, and I liked what I heard, and you know, it was very professionally done. And but I still had a kind of an affiliation to, you know, some of the smaller pirates, because I found that the likes of Nova and Sunshine, they were running as a business, and it was about shareholders and profits. And whereby, when you look back at, let's say, some of the older stations like Radio Dublin, as a prime example, I spent many a day in Radio Dublin studios, just being there, observing what actually went on. And like, I was only a young lad at the time, but everyone who was there, they were kind of coming in with their bundle of records, and they were playing the music. And in my opinion, they were playing the music to promote the artists and also to give Dublin something different to listen to than what we had back then, which would have been, say, RTE. So, you know, they were doing it for the love of radio more so than a paycheck at the end of the week. And I think that's an admirable thing, you know, where you can go on, and you don't have to go to any special DJ schools. You don't have to, you know, take a course in radio. You just, you know, the likes of Radio Dublin, they went in, they were shown what to do, and that was it. You just got on with it. You know, the people were there for the love of radio.
And is that the philosophy that has prompted you to set up Clonmelan Community Radio?
That is it in a nutshell, because I know you said, like, we have Midlands, but after kind of the pirate era, when that's kind of ceased to be back in December 1988, after a lot of the stations that I would have listened to went, I became really disillusioned with the whole thing. And I found that no matter what station you go to, whether it's, you know, insert any of the Dublin stations here or the countrywide stations, but I think they're all doing the same thing. They all have the same format. And I know some people say, well, okay, they have a format. If the format works, keep doing it. The old adage, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But they all sound the same. And I found that there was nothing there for me. And like there were things that I would have been interested in hearing, say, on radio stations. Like during the lockdown, you know, people couldn't go out anywhere. So a quiz, an L quiz or something. There was nothing like that. So I know people were doing their own things at home through the likes of Zoom and Skype. They were having family quizzes. But, you know, we kind of sat back and we said, what can we do? Is there anything we can do? So we decided we'd kind of launch, if you like, an online platform. Now, we didn't really think it would kind of amount to anything, but we said if we'd done it every Saturday, then we could have a quiz. And if people tune in, we can have a quiz, something to take their mind off what's going on in the outside world. So that's what we did. And then I had a couple of advertisements in some of the local businesses, like a chipper and the local news agents. And then I started getting emails from people who were interested in coming on board and basically saying, can I get involved and what can I do? And like, people had their own ideas. So we just said, well, okay, yeah, pick a time, pick a time slot. And, you know, we kind of, we're not professional in any way, shape or form, but we do our best. We're appealing to like a local community, so they kind of, everyone kind of knows everyone. So, you know, there's one lad here, he does a couple of shows during the week, and the amount of people who tune in just to listen to him is absolutely fantastic. You know, there's so much, how would you say, there's so much love, maybe love is too strong a word, but there's a lot of kind of feeling, I don't know how to describe it, but what we put out, we get back tenfold. Now, I'm not making any money. There's nobody makes a penny. Everyone does what they do, and it's completely voluntary. But it's a case of, what can we do for the community? You know, the community has done so much for the people who live in it, and obviously the people in the community. So we wanted to just, you know, give something back to the community. And during the lockdown, we figured, we'll throw on a pub quiz, because they were very popular pre-lockdown. But since they couldn't be done, that's what we did. That's kind of where we kicked off, say, with the quiz. And then it grew, it mushroomed from there, from the quiz to a country music show, to an alternative music show. to a love show. You know, and it's building and building and building.
So why did you decide not to go down the FM route? Because you could have gone to, you know, the 30-day or the 100-day community license and then eventually worked up to be a full-time station. Why did you avoid that option?
John, the main reason we avoided the FM option was primarily because we had visited, myself and a colleague of mine, we had actually visited a couple of the community stations at Lone Community Radio. We went down there, we met some of the people, and we got a tour, and we were sat down, and we were given a lot of information that we would need to actually get up and running on FM. And the same with Dundalk. We went up to Dundalk Radio, same scenario. We were sat down, and the people up there kind of were saying the same thing. This, you know, these are the guidelines. Guidelines are no problem. We've no issues with guidelines. But there was just an amount of paperwork that had to be filled in. And it's like this, it's like, you know, fill it in triplicate and all this. And it just seemed like there was way too much paperwork for very little gain. Because all we would have gained initially would have been a 100-day license, if at all. And that would have been, you know, every weekend we could have broadcast every Saturday and Sunday. That would have been it. But that would not have suited some of the people who are actually on board, because they like to do a live show, because they can get, we have a chat room as well, chat room facility. So when people are doing the live show, they get feedback. You know, there's constant feedback from the people who you are, you're broadcasting to. Whereby if we had have just got a 100-day license, it probably would have meant that a lot of the shows during the weekend would have to be pre-recorded and then just, you know, put into a time slot to be broadcast on the weekend. But then you're missing that interactivity with everyone on the chat. So, like, it just seemed like too much paperwork for very little gain. So we looked around and we seen that there's a lot of people going down the online route. Now, I know there's other ways. I actually had a conversation. Well, sorry, I will be having a conversation with a chap, hopefully within the next week or so, in relation to DAB, the digital audio broadcast. Because I've heard that there's, you know, you can get on to DAB. Now, I don't know much about DAB, so it'll pretty much just be a conversation to as a learning curve more so than anything else. But, you know, that's kind of where we are, and we're happy-ish on just being on the internet. Now, with the addition of the likes of Radio Garden, I mean, people have found us. We actually got some lovely emails in from around the world. Actually, America, chap contacted us, said he listens on Saturday for the quiz. He really enjoys it. And there's also another chap who contacted us. He's in a pub. He runs a pub in the highest point in Kathmandu. It's an Irish themed pub. And he found us through Radio Garden. So, you know, it's starting to blossom. But, you know, that's why we say, you know, we used to be kind of the community. And now it's a case of, like, the community is worldwide. So, like, we're meeting lots of people from different, you know, the four corners of the earth, as they say.
That's
the people who get up to listen to various shows. There's a couple in Australia who they like to listen to one of the shows in particular. They get out of their bed at 4 o'clock in the morning to tune in so they can hear the show and interact on the chat room. And, you know, that's the sort of thing. And there's a great buzz, if you like, from that.
Stephen McKenna of Clonmelon Community Radio from Westmeath. And you can listen in at clonmelloncommunityradio.com.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
And finally, the Hearsay International Audio Festival takes place every 2 years in the village of Kilfinnan in County Limerick, bringing together audio makers of all disciplines from around the world. Normally, the village's public spaces and homes will be filled with the best of international audio, but like so many other cultural activities, this year's festival was in doubt because of COVID-19. But Hearsay 2021 is going ahead online from the 7th to the 14th of May and is completely free this year. The festival director is Dermot McIntyre.
It's been really tough, especially something, so like the Hearsay Festival is very much an international gathering of audio makers. And it's also where two communities meet, you know, the local Kilfinan community and that international audio community. And it was really hard to even just simply say, what could we possibly do? And an awful lot of change has made it, you know, there's an awful lot of unpredictability in the planning. So even when we were saying, oh, well, we could do a blended, you know, one based for Ireland, one based parts that would be based international, which you actually realize is internationally, we participants from, I think it was 28 different countries came the last time. But if you're in Australia, you know, or New Zealand, life is very different from people in the Czech Republic. People in the UK now are having a very different experience of life than we in Ireland are having. So trying to say even who is our audience and what world are they inhabiting became really, really tough. And when we were initially doing even like calls out for ideas, you could just see that disparate level of experiences. So I think we gave up. We started again. We gave up again. We started again. We planned one thing, planned another thing. And in the end, what we've done is we've come back to actually the notion of, could we make this a hyper-local festival? One that's about the community of Kilfinan, but also providing a window into life in Kilfinan for all those people who now have a relationship with Kilfinan and with Hearsay, but who often see Kilfinan under to a very narrow prism of the few days of the festival, and don't get to see the wider, richer community life. And then can we go from that, starting hyperlocal, and then end the festival by moving back out into the world.
So how are you showing Kilfinan to the world then, or showcasing Kilfinan this year? What practically does that mean?
So we'd had huge plans for like creative residencies, artists coming and visiting, working with community groups, doing activity. And what we've come to now is a point of saying, well, what actually this festival is it's a festival of reminding and unearthing. And reminding is that thing of saying, well, actually, there's all these things that we do, whether it was like the community choir or hurling or festivals or all of this stuff that we've done over the years. Could we unearth that? Could we rework or repurpose the things that have been made by visiting artists who've come to Kilfinan? Things which might have been only heard ever once, and could we take that and bring it out? So a lot of it is actually working with archive material, archive programs. I have a small audio production company in Kilfinan itself. So like down to the years, we've made documentaries about Kilfinan. We've done things for community radio. We've done stuff for RTE. We've even done stuff for the US market about Kilfinan itself. And people in Kilfinan have done things. And the genesis of Hearsay was even a pirate radio station of 20 odd years ago, from which there are recordings. So it's about pulling all of those recordings and then representing them as live in the first part. And also then drawing out all the things that visiting artists have made about Kilfinan, and then pulling together even lots of things which have been made in Kilfinan by different people over the years, but which mightn't be about Kilfinan, but which are featuring Kilfinan locales or backdrops.
So are you bringing new media material to the festival as well this year?
Yeah, so there's some things which are premieres. So there was actually a documentary film that has never been aired that was actually made about the 2017 festival. So we go every 2 years. And there was a plan to actually show that in 2019, and it just wasn't possible for a number of reasons. So what's lovely is one of our showpiece ones for this festival is actually a film about the festival itself, but where you get to see all of the work that goes in to preparing the festival, the background scenes, the community organizations which help pull it together, as well as then that international audio, the residencies, the making, and so there's that new work. We've got a couple of new performances as well, but every one of them had to be rooted in Kilfinan. And it's also about community and letting people connect with each other. So there's every year we've had, say, the Sonic Pub Quiz, but we're going to do a virtual version of that. We're going to do live audio baking, where we're going to be turning the baking into an audio art piece. But what we want is people all over the world making scones at the exact same time, and then thinking about the sounds of baking, and we'll be playing pieces about baking and then coming together and chatting online with baking. And then we have a new performance playing on Zoom and connectivity and all of those lectures and all the things that we hear about song collectors from Kilfinan. And that's a collaboration between Eve O'Brien, who's from only a musician just up the road, and Phil Smith, who lives in Brighton, but who'd have won the Hearsay Audio Prize in 2017.
So very much then permeated by the pandemic and by the COVID-19 crisis. So, you know, your festival has had to reinvent itself for that, but it's very much part of the offering as well, artistically and in an audio sense.
Exactly. But, and then even certain bits where we said, like, it was a really interesting one of going, well, what happens when nobody can come to Kilfinan? And then you said, well, actually, in part, you do it for yourself. The only world that I know at this point are literally the 5 kilometres from my door around Kilfinan. But what's lovely is we're going to have some physical installations in Kilfinan, but they've got to be outdoors. They've got to be in public places. They've got to be in counters rather than times that people gather or interact. But what we want is just people to stumble across sounds and encounters. And it's some of it's repurposing things that got made in previous festivals, but then reframing it. So people in Kilfinan get to experience something very specific. And then as we go through the festival, we've been able to expand it so that we've now got it's going to go over 8 days to just make it a little more digestible and manageable. But it's been some smaller things, like, say, the Hearsay Audio Prize has got 50 pieces that have been shortlisted, 25 in each category, because we got hundreds of entries for that. And normally we fly the prize winners physically to Kilfinan or the prize ceremony. But this year, we're actually going to showcase the shortlisted pieces and have them introduced by their makers. So that wouldn't even be possible without the pandemic. So in some cases, it's being able to say, well, actually, this allows us to showcase people, to provide a platform for people, and to provide inspiration for people. So it's both hyper-local and truly international.
And finally, Dermot, can you give us information about how to get more information, how to register, how to attend this virtual Hearsay Audio Festival?
So it's going to take place from May 7th to May 14th. Hearsayfestival.ie will have a registration, but very simple registration. Everything is completely free. There's no charges for anything. And most of the events are more time-given, so it's not continuous, but there'll be a schedule of events up from the first week of May, and people can choose what they're doing. One of the key things that we're definitely saying is it's all live, so that there's not going to be things where you can say, oh well, I'm just publishing that and consuming it. What we want is that feeling of people watching the premiere, people hearing that piece of archive audio, people being in the live listens for the Hearsay Prize, and they're all in it together. So it's I think that's that would be important. Afterwards, who knows, we might make it available. But this is about it's about bringing people together and enjoying yourself and maybe a little bit of healing in difficult times.
Dermot McIntyre of the Hearsay International Audio Festival that begins on May the 7th online, and you can find out more at hearsayfestival.ie. And that brings us to the end of this edition of Wireless on Flirt FM. Join us again in June for the final show of the season. I hope you'll be with us then, but in the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt and on facebook.com/wirelessflirt. You can also listen into previous shows on wirelessflirt.radio.ie, where you can also subscribe to our monthly podcast. Until the next edition of Wireless, this is John Walsh wishing you good listening.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.